once again for Insight with Jack Stogler on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. Insight with Jack Stogler is being brought to you by the community-minded sponsors you're going to hear during today's broadcast. Without further ado, here's your host, Mr. Jack Stogler.
Good evening, everyone, on this gorgeous Wednesday. Chilly, but gorgeous. And we welcome in the studio one of our favorite guests, because I basically don't have to say anything. You know, you just let Steve go and he runs with it. So we welcome in the studio.
Plus, he probably wouldn't ask an intelligent question anyway.
That's true.
Although you have asked some questions over the years that would seem pretty dumb to a landscape guy, but is probably questions that 9/10 of our audience would ask him.
Very possible. So,
yeah, there's some dumb questions, but we all have dumb questions for landscaping. There's not very many people with a degree like that.
Well, if you don't know by now, our guest is Mr. Steve Stone from Nature's Green Nursery. Steve is the owner. I think Nature's Green is now 25 years old?
31.
So you started when you were 14 then?
10.
There you go. So, well, first of all, let's talk about your new gig, okay? And that is as a grandpa.
Oh my gosh. That is the best gig of all times.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. Carly's little boy, Rhett, is going to turn one in 1 month. And he is just, he's fantastic.
It is unbelievable how much fun they are.
It's really cool. He is a fun kid, smart, and he's very active.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to keep up. But
smiles all the time and has a lot of personality and just a neat kid.
He does have a lot of personality. He's fun. He's a great kid.
Fantastic.
We really enjoyed watching him and taking care of him and taking him with us when we go places. He's a blast for sure. Well,
and I'll tell you what, as a experienced grandpa, it is always neat to like kind of follow guys on your Facebook and to see how much they enjoy that first grandchild.
It's incredible. Except I didn't realize that I was such a horrible parent, because my three kids tell me that I treat him completely different than I treated them.
That's
and apparently true. they really had unbelievably terrible childhoods. Yeah. To listen to them tell the stories.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And how lenient we are with Red. I don't think they have it as bad as they think.
I know. Well, you know, and you will find that as like Red grows and you get to spend more that. You don't know squat about raising a kid, because you're going to give them like a piece of bologna and you can't give kids processed meat, you know. And it's
oh, anything goes at my house. He can have whatever he wants. Slice of pizza, cool. Cookie, I don't care.
Here. And that's why they don't want you to touch their child.
Well, that's fine.
But when they're at grandpa's house, it's grandpa's room.
That's my rules. My gosh.
So you know, the idea of having you on was to kind of what to do to prepare for, you know, winter and your flower beds.
And then it snuck up on us.
And then Mother Nature kind of dropped one on us here.
Snuck up. We didn't necessarily see that coming. Yeah, that was a fairly heavy snowfall for as early as it was, and for it to stick around like it did. Certainly unusual for the middle of November, for sure.
So was it detrimental to what?
Oh, no. The temperatures were never you know, bad enough that, you know, the plants are going to tolerate that fine. Which it never really happened, but when you get early snows like that and a lot of the trees haven't completely shed their leaves yet, you can get a lot of weight in the branches and stuff. And if you get the snow or ice to stick to the leaves and branches and limbs, and then you get wind, then you get a lot of damage. But the snow was relatively heavy, and it we never really had any significantly cold temperatures. Yeah. And so I didn't see any damage from, you know, branches and limbs and stuff getting broken out, which is, again, what you can sometimes find with early snowfalls like this. But overall, you know, it didn't hurt anything at all. The temperatures were never, you know, I think the lows were in the mid-20s or even 23, 24. You know, that's fine. Plants are going to tolerate that fine. Yeah. Even, I mean, I don't know, kind of early, I guess, you know, early in the mid-fall. But the plants are fine. There's no temperatures that are going to cause any issues at all.
Good. So, we had an interesting spring, summer, early fall in that it seemed like the first half of it was just about picture perfect, exactly what you'd want. You know, we got the rains when we kind of needed it, and everything was looking great till about the middle of July, and then it got dry, and it stayed dry from the middle of August until first of October.
Well, I mean, we're still, you know, it varies dramatically, but we're still 4 inches in a deficit.
Yeah,
for normal or average for this part of Ohio for the time of year that we're in. So we're still at a deficit. I mean, and if you remember last season, you know, last late summer, fall was incredibly dry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, precipitation was, you know, not a lot during the winter, but then April, May was pretty good or normal. So we're still at kind of a deficit. I mean, for the most part, we've had two really dry late summer and falls kind of in a row. And like I said, the snow helped, I mean, a little bit because it, you know, obviously melted. But, you know, dry falls can be very problematic for plants. A lot of people, again, when it gets to be fall time, temperatures are milder, and so the impact, you don't notice the impact on the plants because the temperatures are mild. When it's the summertime and it's 90 degrees every day, the grass immediately shows symptoms, the plants immediately wilt and show symptoms, and so it's obvious.
Yeah.
When it's this time of year, it's not as obvious because plants are into dormancy or dormant. You know, the grass is, nobody's paying attention to it anymore for the most part. So, you know, again, two dry falls, you know, evergreen specifically can show, again, they're not going to show, you know, evergreens, when I say evergreens, spruces, pines, arborvitaes, junipers, you know, anything, hollies, boxwoods, they aren't going to show you bad symptoms now, but they're thirsty. Yeah. And so you get into a hard winter, a cold winter, cold temperatures, wind is bad. They are lacking moisture going into the wintertime. And then that winter, if we have a really hard, cold winter, exacerbates the problem. And then they don't have enough moisture to keep their needles or their leaves alive. And they shed, or the foliage desiccates, it loses its moisture. And then they'll shed during the winter. And then in the springtime, you'll come out after, you know, fall, and you're like, I don't remember that thing looking that lousy, or I don't remember that thing looking as thin as it is. I can look straight through it. Last year, it didn't look like that. Okay. Well, that is drought or lack of moisture damage. And that's why watering, even now, you know, again, after a snowfall, I think everybody thinks it's winter, but you can still water all your plants, evergreens, especially spruces and pines and arborvitaes. If they go into winter thirsty, they're going to struggle, and they're going to come into springtime and look lousy. Yep. So watering even this late in the season is still, important, especially, you know, plants that, when I say new plants, I don't mean plants that you planted last week or last month. When I say new plants, I mean they could be planted within the last year or two, yeah, would be considered new. And those plants certainly don't have their root system completely reestablished. And so watering is simple and easy and hugely important, but a lot of times overlooked or neglected.
I'll tell you what, we're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back, you know, temperatures are supposed to, you know, kind of moderate here in the next few days. And, you know, you might get the bug to go back outside. And we'll talk about the best things to do when you do go back outside right after this.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Brick Street Tavern in downtown Fort Recovery. Open Tuesday through Saturday, Brick Street Tavern serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Their weekday lunch menu changes throughout the week and includes homemade pies and soups. On the weekends, they offer evening steak and chicken dinners. And catering services are also available. For more information, call 419-375-4888.
We thank Brick Street Tavern for supporting the Tribe 107.3. Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Cooper Farms, family-owned and operated since 1938. With locations in Mercer, Dark, Van Wert, and Paulding counties, Cooper Farms produces a wide variety of turkey, ham, and chicken products, along with table eggs and liquid eggs distributed across North America. They're also proud to give back through community initiatives right here in Northwest Ohio. Learn more at cooperfarms.com. Thanks to Cooper Farms for supporting local athletics and the Hometown Huddle on the Tribe 107.3.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from K&L Tractor Sales in Fort Recovery. K&L Tractor Sales is located on State Route 49 South and carries a variety of new and used farm equipment, including tractors, skid steers, hay tools, tillage and harvesting equipment. You'll find brands like Ferris, Kloss, Great Plains, Salford BVI, Artsway, New Holland, and more. They offer parts and service to keep farm and rural equipment running smoothly. You can learn more at kltractorsales.com.
Thank you to K&L Tractor Sales for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio.
Fort Recovery Merchants Christmas Open House is coming up this Thursday through Sunday, and in addition to all the great deals in all the stores, here are some of the other great things going on. On Thursday evening, many of our stores will be open that evening, and they'll have the lighting of the Christmas tree in Krenning Park at 7:15, and our Girl Scouts will have hot chocolate and coffee available there all evening. The stores will have special deals on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but there will be lots of extra events on Sunday. From 11 to 4, there will be a live nativity just east of Fort Rec on East Butler Street. Then carriage rides will be running from 11 to 4 from our museum, and our museum will be open free of charge from 11 to 4. And there will be a Pioneer Christmas demonstration in the Log House in Krenning Park from 11 to 4. And be sure to sign up at all the merchants to win a $1,000 Merchants Association shopping spree. It'll be a great time each day this Thursday through Sunday for the Christmas Open House with lots of surprises and great deals all over town. Don't miss it.
Insight. Talking to Mr. Steve Stone from Nature's Green Nursery. And, you know, so Steve, you know, we had this snow and, you know, everybody gets that initial feeling that, you know, winter is here. There isn't much I can do in my flower beds anymore. But now they're looking at 65 degrees on this weekend.
Right.
So you know, what do you do with your various flowers when you have a chance to get back outside again?
Well, there's still a lot to do, and people are always, you know, excited and fired up and April and May to get out there and work. And when you get to this time of year, one of the issues obviously you deal with is it's dark about when you get home from work, so you don't have a lot of evening time to do what you want to do. But there is, you know, all your herbaceous perennials, all your perennial flowers, salvias, hostas, daylilies, all those things, after a couple of good hard frosts, those can all be trimmed down and should be trimmed down in the fall or now. Okay. Taking that dead foliage and old foliage and kind of trimming it, cutting it off, raking it up, and getting rid of it is very beneficial for your landscape beds. That old dead tissue can harbor insects that will overwinter and come back next year. Disease issues that you can get, like daylilies get rust, and there's different types of foliage diseases that there's an inoculum there that will, it's like a seed that causes the disease to come back next season. So to clean the beds and get rid of all that stuff, that old debris and stuff, to get rid of it now just keeps your beds clean and eliminates issues for next year.
Yeah.
So cleaning the landscape beds, raking the leaves out. You know, when you're out in town like your street, you got, you know, a million beautiful, humongous old trees, and, you know, the neighbor don't rake or whatever, and you collect a lot of leaves around your house and in certain areas, window wells and basement, you know, walkouts and stuff. It's always a good idea to clean all that stuff up, because again, it can harbor insects, it can harbor, you know, mice or whatever, rodents and stuff. So keeping all that clean and nice and tidy and stuff is beneficial for your lawn and landscape. And so trimming all that stuff back is, you know, certainly would be a good idea. You know, I noticed with all the wind and stuff that we've had, I've got lots of leaves that have collected in different places. So, you know, as soon as we get a nice day, and like you said, it's Saturday or Sunday or something, when I have time, you know, vacuuming and raking and cleaning all that stuff up, you know, leaves left on your lawn and kind of, you know, packed down, or again, with the snow, the heavy snow that we had, kind of packs the leaves down, you know, that can hinder how your grass overwinters. It can smother your grass if it's thick enough.
Yep.
And so raking those up, or just simply, you don't have to rake them up. I mean, go through with a good mulching mower and mulch them up, and it's perfectly fine. And that's going to be, you know, certainly pay huge dividends in the spring. And
so it's like mulching leaves even more beneficial than you raking them and getting them out of there?
Yes and no.
Well, mulching your leaves is perfectly fine. Some instances, like, you know, my mom's backyard's got those two humongous maple trees. When they completely shed, you probably can't mulch those enough to not smother the grass out. But so you go through and you vac them a couple of times and get the worst of them, but then the rest of them that kind of falls or blows around, you can mulch those up. That's perfectly fine. I mean, mulching the grass and mulching the leaves, they decompose very, very quickly, and it creates organic matter, which is good for your soil. Yep. So it's good for, you know, worms. It's good for a lot of different things, but I mean, it's good for your soil profile and your soil texture to have organic matter there that's decomposing. So that's really good. So you don't have to rake every last leaf and get it to the curb. I mean, once the city's done picking them up, you can still, if you need to mow, but just, you know, mulch them up real good when you go across them.
I have several people that have, that I see on Facebook that say you need to leave all the leaves on the ground or wherever they are, because butterflies and this kind of thing, whatever kind of good insects, winter in that. And they are adamant that you do not do any of that. Don't rake up your leaves, leave them somewhere. And I have a neighbor that leaves his leaves laying there, and there's dead patches of grass under it, and I'm just thinking that's not necessarily the best thing. But you're destroying the natural habitat if you get rid of the leaves.
There's a little bit of an argument in what you're saying that is accurate, but again, the amount and the density of the leaves can certainly. It's probably not going to hurt the trees. It's not going to hurt the perennials. It's not going to hurt your flower beds. But certainly it's going to have a negative impact on the quality of your turf. If you don't care about the quality of your turf, if, you know, thin, bare spots, whatever, is you're okay with that, then that is accurate. But to maintain a high-quality turf, you're not going to want it to be covered with leaves all winter because that's going to create issues.
Yeah. Those it harbors the
the good and the bad bugs.
Correct. And then again, depending on the type of tree, and again, what happens when you mulch a when you mulch the leaves, you're cutting them up into little pieces, and so they decompose rapidly. When you don't mulch them, leaves have, depending on the type of tree, I mean, certain trees have leaves that have really thick cuticles, and cuticles are like the waxy layer on the top and bottom of the leaf, and unless you cut that or break it or smash it or whatever, it takes them a long time to decompose, and so they're never going to decompose in just over a winter, and again, that's going to lead to patchy turf and, you know, smothered grass and stuff like that. Then you exacerbate that by, if you have a, you know, a heavy snow or a lot of snow cover over the winter time, those are just, you're setting yourself up for white snow mold and pink snow mold and just thin, overall thin quality turf when spring finally rolls around. So
you talked about, like, you cutting back your hostas and mm-hmm. your daylilies. After you cut those back to ground level, mm-hmm. are you supposed to, like, cover up what's left?
Mature plants, mature hostas that's been in for a number of years, daylilies, salvias, coneflower, rebeckia, all of those, you shouldn't have to. They're going to be very tolerant of cold weather, and so
the root systems are developed enough to where
they're going
to
tolerate a cold winter just fine. Newly planted perennials, you know, again, this season they were just planted, or maybe last season they were just planted, whatever, those certainly are going to benefit from a layer of mulch. And I've always talked to no avail to try to explain to people that, you know, fall mulching, when I say fall, you know, now or September, October, even into early November, mulching is actually tremendously more beneficial for your plants than spring mulching.
But it doesn't look as good.
But yeah, nobody wants to mulch in the fall, and nobody thinks about mulching in the fall.
No.
Except nerdy plant guys. Because what you're doing in the spring, especially if you're one of those guys that get out there real early and put your mulch down in the spring, you're putting that mulch down, you're insulating that cold in the ground. The ground's still cold if it's early April or mid-April, the ground's still cold. And so you're insulating that cold in the ground, and it takes longer for the ground to warm up. If you mulch this time of year, you're insulating the warmth into the ground. So again, it's easier on the plants. It's better for the plants. It's much more beneficial for the plants to mulch in the fall than in the spring.
Yep.
But yeah, I still haven't sold any mulch in weeks.
No, I listen to you.
Compared to like April. But yeah, fall mulching is great for all your perennials. If you've got, you know, roses, there's a good rule of thumb, you know, if you've got some hybrid tea roses and roses that are a little fussy when it comes to overwintering, that mulching them with a cone or putting a layer of mulch around those to kind of protect the crown of the plant is a good practice and a good blanket for the winter time to protect them from the cold winter winds.
So a lot of plants that you read about when it comes to cutting them back or, you know, pruning, a lot of them say to wait till spring. And most of the time, the reason for it is because it provides food for the birds or the butterflies in the, you know, winter time.
Right.
Is it okay to prune your roses and those other things now instead of waiting until it's spring?
There's if you go on the internet and read and research, and there'll be people that will tell you, like, I always get questions about roses and hydrangeas. Do I trim them off in the fall or the spring? And it's it's a common question I get asked constantly. If you're having success doing whatever you're doing, then you're probably fine.
Yeah.
I have always been kind of, the rule of thought is I do that kind of pruning in March or early April. Reason being is if you have a mild winter, hydrangeas and roses are going to thrive, or they're going to grow, or they're going to die back, depending on the winter and how severe the winter is. So in the fall, you're trimming back and you're just kind of guessing, oh, I'm going to trim them back by half or whatever. And you're just kind of guessing where you're going to trim them back. If you wait till spring, roses and hydrangeas again, the stems are very, very, very bright green if they're alive, and they're really dark chocolate brown if they're dead. So it's really obvious in the springtime to clip and prune just what's dead out. And so you're really not guessing. You can obviously look at the plant and decide where I need to make my cuts. And when I was lucky enough to be at Ohio State and I worked for the university in the horticulture department, we actually had a humongous rose garden that we did research, and all the big rose companies would send us their roses, and we would grow them for 3 years, and then we would research how they bloomed, how susceptible they were to disease, and then we would, you know, take all that data and send it back, and then they would decide if it was a rose they were going to continue to propagate, or if it was, that's junk, we're not going to grow those anymore. And we always did the pruning in the spring. And so I just fall back on the university days, that's what we did. And so that's why, again, that is another reason that I do all that kind of pruning in the spring. But if you have success doing it in the fall, I'm not telling you you're doing it wrong.
Yep.
I'm at the school of thought that I do that stuff in the spring.
Well, and it makes sense. Your explanation about why it's less guesswork in the spring makes complete sense.
Yeah, if you have a mild winter, you know some of the roses, like the hybrid teas, are a little fussy to deal with. But I mean, you know, Floribundus, Grandiflora, the knockout roses, all those. If you have a mild winter, they're not going to die back much at all.
Yeah,
and so you don't have to prune them very much. And if you have a severe winter and that you get die back by half, I mean, then in the springtime, again, you can come in and make your selection, how you're going to cut them, and you're done. But, you know, winter dictates that. Temperatures and, you know, the winter conditions dictate, you know, what they're going to look like in the spring in most cases.
So hydrangea trees, like you see those more and more.
Yep.
Like the balls seem to stay on those things forever.
Right.
Okay. Can you go out and clip those off and, they turn kind of a crappy
tan
brown anyways.
Hydrangeas there's a lot of different varieties. I mean, hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of different varieties. And they're all a little different depending on variety. Again, on hydrangeas, I usually, on the shrubs or bush forms, I usually don't trim them back till spring. But with a tree, that's a completely different school of thought on those suckers, because they are beautiful and they bloom spectacular.
Yeah.
The problem with them is, you're in town. Locations where you plant those, they're beautiful, but they're grafted on a stem or a stalk or a trunk or whatever you want to call it, and they get so top heavy, and they don't have a real heavy, thick root system, and so they're susceptible to wind, and they're susceptible to, you know, just blowing over. Like you lived out in the country and you had a big farm field next to you, and you plant one right in front of your house. Oh my gosh, this is beautiful. I love it. And then it's you're probably not going to have a lot of success with it, because the wind is just, it's always going to be leaning to the east.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have to stake the heck out of it to keep it straight. In that instance, yes, pruning those dead blooms off before winter sets in makes perfect sense, because that's what's going to catch your wind. That's what's going to catch the ice and the snow. And that's what's going to cause that thing to get even heavier than what it should be, and guarantee you, with a stiff west wind, it's going to either blow completely over, or you're going to come out in the spring and it's going to have this leaning tower of Pisa look going on, or it's going to be leaning to the east. So yes, pruning those back in the fall, I would highly recommend, because again, those flowers can be as big as a softball, and they catch a lot of wind, and they're going to get torn up if you don't kind of manage the size of those.
fantastic. Well, I tell you what, we're going to take another break. We're going to come back, and I was wanting to ask you about your pool business.
Okay.
And to find out, you know, if like you're seeing more of that kind of stuff and, you know, exactly what the future holds in the personal pool business. So we'll be back right after this.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 is provided by Klingshern & Sons Trucking in Burkittsville. For over 50 years, Klingshern & Sons Trucking has been providing a safe workplace for their employees and maintains integrity, fairness, and honesty with their customers and business partners. With their dump trucks, stone slingers, flatbeds, vans, and refrigerated trailers, they provide local and long-haul transportation with on-time delivery. Learn more online about Klingshern & Sons and their employment opportunities at klingshernandsons.com. Their phone number is 937-338-5000.
We thank Klingshern & Sons Trucking for supporting the Tribe 107.3.
Tonight's Hometown Huddle on the Tribe 107.3 is supported by Hull Brothers Case IH, serving farmers and families for more than 125 years. Located in Fort Recovery, Hull Brothers offers new and used tractors from Case IH and Kubota, plus parts and service to keep your equipment running strong. They also carry mowers and outdoor gear from Grasshopper, Cub Cadet, and Toro. Learn more at hullbros.com or call 419-375-2827. Thanks to Hull Brothers for supporting Fort Recovery Athletics and today's broadcast on the Tribe.
Hey. Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Miracle Lanes in Fort Recovery, offering bowling, family fun, and a place for the community to gather. Hey, Harry Carey, tell us more.
Hey, they've got lanes for parties and celebrations and open bowling on the weekend. In the kitchen, it's wings, pizzas, sandwiches, wraps, and subs. Plus a pizza wing and salad bar buffet every Friday at lunch. For more information, the number's 419-375-4274.
We thank Miracle Lanes and Fort Recovery for their support of the Tribe 107.3.
Season tickets for the 2025-2026 basketball season are being sold in the high school office from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on days that school is in session. Last year's boys' season tickets will have until Friday, November 21st, to get the reserve seat season tickets. Starting Monday, November 24th, anyone not having a reserve seat or wanting a different seat for the boys' games can go to the high school office and see what seats are available for purchase. Season tickets for the boys' home games are $55 for reserved seats for adults, and student season tickets are $35. If children sit in the reserved seat area, they must also have a reserved seat season ticket because all lower-level seats are reserved season tickets. Season tickets for the girls' home games are the same as for the boys, except there will be no reserved seats, $55 for adults and $35 for students. Both girls' and boys' home games, adult tickets at the door will be $8 each, and student tickets at the door will be $7 each. And if you're 65 or older, they offer a senior citizens pass for only $30, and that's good for both boys' and girls' home junior high and high school games, but this does not include a reserved seat for the boys' home varsity games. For the junior high games, they have an adult all-sports season pass for $25 and student season passes for $10, and those season passes are good for all boys' and girls' junior high home regular season games. For individual junior high games, adult tickets at the door are $5 and $4 for students. The basketball season is coming soon, so get to the high school office now to get your basketball season tickets.
Go Indians!
Yep.
We're here talking to Mr. Steve Stone, Nature's Green Nursery, and what's the name of your pool business?
Easy Life Pools.
Easy Life Pools. And you've been in the pool business for how long?
5 years.
What made you decide to get into it? Or did they come to you and say, hey, we'd like for you to...
We've been doing pools for years and years and years and years, but we always subbed them to specific contractors that we had relationships with. And we just got to the point where when we were pulling in
other another subcontractor that was doing our pools, we never really had any control over timing, you know. First of all, they kind of put our projects, they didn't prioritize our projects because they weren't their projects, they were my projects. So they didn't prioritize us at all. And so it was taking months and months and months and months to get our projects done. And, you know, quality, but a lot of different factors. Sure. And then it just got to the point where, you know, we just need to try to do this in-house. Then that way we can control quality, we can control timing, we can kind of control everything. So in general, we could, you know, do a better job and we could get, you know, give our clients a better answer. Hey, when's this going to be done? Well, we should be able to do, you know, this, this, and this, and it'll be done in, you know, 2 months or a month or whatever, instead of...
Well, it's hard to provide customer service when you're not the one doing most.
And there's a lot of overlap with the pool and the patio and the electric and the plumbing and all that stuff. And so it was kind of a little bit more of a coordinating problem, or kind of a coordinating just didn't go as smoothly as we wanted. So then when we do it in-house with the electric and the plumbing and the patio and the pavers and the landscaping and everything, it we can coordinate everything, and it's all in-house, so it's easier to manage.
Yeah. And so has it you seems like you hear and see more and more people putting in their own pool.
Without question.
Okay. So is that why, I guess.
Is that a sustainable trend?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking? I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, we, you know, again, I've been doing this 31 years this year. So, you know, when we started, it was all, you know, landscaping, trees and shrubs and perennials and mulch and lawns. Yeah. And then, you know, we've always had a big presence in, you know, patios,
yep,
designing and installing patios and decks. And so that kind of, you know, dovetails in with your landscaping. And then we started doing a lot of pergolas and, you know, like outdoor garden structures, and which again dovetailed into your patio and your landscaping. And then we started doing you know, pavilions, which, you know, pergolas are like an open wooden type structure, and then pavilions are a roofed, you know, yep, structure, so you've got a solid roof over your head. And so then that again kind of dovetailed into, you know, with the landscaping and the patio, and we call that outdoor entertaining. So yep, you've got, and that trend has, I mean, I don't know what the exponential growth is on outdoor entertaining, but I mean, when we started, you know, you put a 20 by 20 concrete patio behind your house and put a Weber grill on it and a couple of lawn chairs, and here we go, you know. And now, you know, we have, you know, a lot more thought and just design, a lot the design aspects and stuff, and it's a really, really big deal. I mean, tremendous, which is, you know, great. I mean, for us, because we do a really good job of designing and installing all that. And then again, the pools kind of dovetail into the rest of that. Yeah. You know, outdoor entertaining, you know, we do outdoor fireplaces, we do water features, we do waterfalls, we do fire features, different types of fire features, gas, you know, just all kinds of stuff. And it all dovetails into just all of that whole outdoor entertaining experience.
Yeah. Well, and it just kind of expands a person's living area to a certain extent.
And know? Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty, you know, proud to say, I mean, if you're building, you know, if you're building a new home today, I mean, you're going to be looking at minimum $250 a square foot,
yeah,
roughly. And then if you're building super high-end stuff, you know, $300 a square foot, you know, we can add quality outdoor entertaining or entertaining space. We can add space to your house for $100 a square foot,
yeah,
you know. So it's a third or, you know, half of what a roof and walls,
yeah,
are going to cost.
Yep.
And, you know, you can
you know, a good design outdoor entertaining area, like a pavilion with a roof, you know, over your head. And if you do some screens, and you do, you know, a heating source like a fireplace or fire feature or something like that, I mean, you can use that from March till November, you know, in a lot of cases. So you get a lot of bang for your buck compared to, you know, putting up walls and a roof and all that stuff.
Sure. So the average pool that people are putting in, are you most of them heated now?
The pools?
Yeah.
Oh, man, we probably put in, I don't think we put in 100 pools, but we've probably put in 70.
Yep.
I think one of them didn't have a heater.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody does a heater. I mean, it's not a super high add-on cost. I mean, you're probably talking about, you know, $3,500-ish dollars. Yeah. And that, again, with a heater, that's going to extend your season of use a month in the spring and a month in the fall.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's well worth it to do a heater. I can only think of one that we did that we did not do a heater. Everybody else does heaters.
Yep. What's the projected life span of a swimming pool?
Well, we do fiberglass pools, and we do liner pools. Mm-hmm. Fiberglass pools, the one company that we work with out of Knoxville, Tennessee, they have a lifetime warranty on their shells. So, I mean, they installed correctly. They shouldn't wear out. I don't know. Again, everything gets better. Honestly, over time,
yeah.
I mean, years and years and years and years ago, if you had some of the old style pools that might have a concrete bottom and like a fiberglass sides, or in some cases they were like steel and they rust and stuff, you know, 25 years was probably about max, and then you kind of had to do a complete remodel or completely redo it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident to say that, you know, our fiberglass pools, the equipment's going to wear out at some point. You're going to have to replace your heater. At some point, you're certainly going to have to replace a pump.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, PVC's not going to wear out, and the fiberglass, you know, shouldn't wear out. Your cover, you know, is certainly a wear item, like a roof, you know, that a pool cover should last you 12 to 15 years, you know, and then you're going to have to get a new pool cover.
Yep.
But, I mean, the pool itself shouldn't wear out. Now, liner-type pools, liners are, again, like a roof that they have a life expectancy, and you have to replace the liner, and the liner should last you 12 to 15 years-ish. And again, that depends on wear and tear and stuff, but you can put a new liner in, and then you're off to the races again. So, I mean, I don't think they get to a point where they wear out and you have to replace them.
So, like, can you see in your crystal ball, what's the next new big thing?
I don't know. I mean, outdoor entertaining is certainly popular, and it's continuing to be more and more and more popular. And again, you know, a lot of our projects, you know, the last couple of years have been bigger, I don't say bigger, just more in depth, you know. Yep. And I see the outdoor entertaining getting bigger and bigger. We do, you know, like you said, the pavilions, and it might be freestanding, like it's got four legs and you walk and stand underneath it. It can be also added onto your house, and we can pull a patio room off your house and it's connected to the house. And the big thing that I see that is gaining popularity is there's different types of automatic screens that your pavilion, you can screen them. And when I say screen, it's not like your Aunt B's screen door on the back of Andy's house. I mean, the density is such that they'll roll up and come down, but the density is such that it really diverts wind. Oh, obviously, you know, insects can't get in and out, and also it diverts rain. I mean, you can have a driving rain, it hits the screen and it falls straight to the ground. Those, again,
if you had a heat source, whether it be infrared in your ceiling or wherever, a fireplace or something, that turns that space into, I would say, dang near 11 months. Like if you drop the screens and you have a heat source out there, you could be out there in a hoodie and it could be 25 degrees and you're going to be able to enjoy that space. And so we have a lot of clients that, you know, their kids are grown and they're having kids and the family just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And we do a lot of work for, I guess you would say that, like the empty nesters, that the empty nesters are great clients of ours because they're adding onto their house, putting patio rooms on. So when Thanksgiving and Christmas, they have overflow. Yep. So they have room for their kids. They're also the clients that are putting in a lot of them are putting in swimming pools because they're wanting to get their kids and their grandkids. They want to give them a destination to come to entertain and see the kids and the grandkids.
To be cool grandparents.
Be cool grandparents and hang out. And that's honestly, I mean, I can sitting here thinking, I mean, I could name 10 or 12 people that we've done huge projects for, and they're all, you know, they have families and they have two or three or four kids. They might have 10 grandkids and they're like, well, we're putting a swimming pool in here. We're putting an outdoor kitchen over here. We're doing this, we're doing this, we're doing this. And then this is where everybody's coming on the weekends and on Friday night. And, you know, hey, more power to them. It's a great plan.
Fantastic.
You know, and you know, it just seems like there's more emphasis on that nuclear family and how to keep everybody, giving everybody a place to go, and it's neat that they're investing like that.
It's neat. You got that. You got the empty nesters that are drawing their kids and their grandkids back.
Yeah.
And then you've got another client base that is, you know, maybe a little more affluent as far as they've got a little bit more, you know, disposable income.
Yep.
Their kids are younger, and I've got some clients I'm working with right now, and they're, you know, their kids are 10 and 11 years old, and they're like, man, we really want to do, you know, a pool, and it's going to be a stretch, but we think we really want to do it. Yep. And my comment to them is, and it's not a sales pitch, it's like, you know, it is in your kids' age, it's a good idea. Why is it a good idea? It's not a good idea because I get to make money putting a swimming pool in. It's a good idea because those kids are going to be the popular kids. And all the kids are going to want to go to their house, your house. And I said, so your kids are at home with you. All the other kids come over and hang out, which may or may not be a good idea if you like them or not. But it just kind of is a parent, and you kind of, you know, watch your kids and want to know who they're with and what's happening. And, you know, I hate to say who are the good kids and who are the bad kids, but again, everybody's at your place. So you have a little bit more comfort or control over what's happening. And so you're the destination. So that's where everybody hangs out. So again, if you, you know, you get to kind of, I don't want to say be in charge, but you just get a little bit more control, and then you can keep a little bit closer tabs on what's happening. Yeah. And that's going to last from, you know, when they're 10 all the way up till they're 18, you know, that's going to be a destination that kids are going to want to be at.
Yep.
And so there's, in my opinion, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, I tell you what, we're going to take another break and we're going to come back and you can kind of tie a nice little bow up to this whole thing and touch on things we haven't touched on yet.
Oh, yeah. We got plenty.
We'll be back after this.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Fort Recovery Insurance Agency Incorporated. As an independent agency, Fort Recovery Insurance works with providers like Buckeye State Mutual, Nationwide, Progressive, Indiana Farmers, Donegal, Ohio Mutual, Acuity, Safeco, and Hagerty, offering insurance options for vehicles, homes, farms, life, and health. We thank Fort Recovery Insurance Agency for supporting the Tribe 107.3, WFRC, LP.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 is provided by Reasoner Energy Products in Coldwater, installing and servicing products from Train HVAC, Generac Generators, and Mitsubishi Electric Ductless Systems. Reasoner Energy Products is proud to support community growth through quality service and local commitment. Learn more by visiting their location at 445 Hardin Street in Coldwater or online at ReasonerEnergyProducts.com. Their phone number is 419-678-4858.
We thank Reasoner Energy Products for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Wayne IGA in downtown Fort Recovery. Wayne IGA offers a full-service meat counter with fresh-cut steaks, a full-service deli, and a grab-and-go selection of store-made salads, subs, and ready-to-eat meals. You'll also find fresh fruits and vegetables, plus a variety of party trays, including veggie and meat and cheese trays. Stop by for quality meats, fresh produce, and convenient meals made for busy days. Find more at WayneIGA.com or call 419-375-2865. Thanks to Wayne IGA for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
Our Indians are still playing football, and the Hometown Huddle will bring you every play live. Our Indians took the three-hour ride down to Pike County on Friday and beat the previously undefeated Eastern Eagles 38-6. They now move on to week three of the playoffs and will now take the much shorter trip over to Marion Local this Friday night to take on the Flyers, who have now won a state record 75 straight games. Our Wayne IGA pregame show will start at 6:40. We've had great crowds for our first two playoff games, even with 2 and 3 hour road trips, so there's no excuse for not packing the stands at Maria Stein this Friday. But if you just can't get there in person, you can always listen live on the Hometown Huddle, the Tribe 107.3 FM, WFRC, and FortRecoveryRadio.com, the home of the Indians.
We're back. Insight. Neil, I went the whole show and never once messed up the finger pointing thing.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm disappointed. You always give me grief.
I always do. So,
and I'm sad.
And you're sad. Well, that won't last long. So we're back talking to Mr. Steve Stone from Nature's Green. Steve, we have touched on a lot, and as you look at like what we may have missed from a preparing for winter, whether it's your flower beds or your bushes, have we missed anything?
Yep, turf care. It's late in the season. Obviously, we've already had snow, but if you are disappointed or have been disappointed with turf, with your lawn, with density, color, whatever, it's not too late to do fertilizer. Fertilizer late season, in this late, I mean, even probably even up to December, by the looks of the forecast I'm seeing.
Yep.
Late season fertilization is like a must. If you want a good looking yard, what's awesome this time of year is the turf knows what time of year it is due to day length, and then those the days are really short. So it's not going to take that fertilizer you're putting down and put it into top growth, which is going to cause it to grow like crazy, and you're going to mow. That's May.
Yep.
People, again, want to fertilize their lawn in May, just like they want to mulch in May.
Yep.
And fall fertilization pays tremendously more dividends than May, because you're building the roots and getting them fat and happy and sassy to overwinter, and then it's going to come out in the spring and it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be dense. It's going to be thick. And again, you're promoting root growth this time of year. You're not promoting top growth. And so fertilizing and core aerating this time of year, if you care about your lawn at all, those are two things that should be done right now. Core aerating and fertilization, it's going to make a huge difference in density and color in the spring.
So my yard has numerous bare spots that was still created, I think, in last summer's drought.
Oh, and it doesn't surprise me at all.
And you know, there was kind of the philosophy was give it a year. A lot of that will bounce back. Okay, and it really doesn't seem like it has.
if there's bare spots, if they're the size of your fist or a softball or smaller, I wouldn't try to overseed or spot seed those. Fertilization will cause those to heal. I don't know how or who or how or what kind of program you're on as far as if you have a turf company that manages your lawn. But fertilization is going to fix those spots. If it's, you know, size of a basketball or bigger, you might want to consider spots. It's too late to spot seed those, but you would consider spot seeding those in the springtime. But fertilization will go a long ways into making those lawns fill in if there's a lot of small thin spots. And again, you know, if you are getting a turf or lawn care service, I mean, I would defend them in that if we had a normal growing season, those probably would be healed. But we had a lousy fall last year and we had a lousy fall this year with temperatures and lack of rainfall. So we haven't had good growing seasons. And if you have bluegrass, I mean, bluegrass is a cool season grass. It only grows in April and May and September and October. So you got 4 months to make hay. And other than that, that stuff just kind of sits there. It does not, I mean, obviously it doesn't grow in the wintertime, but it doesn't grow in July and August either. And so it's, you know, it struggles with the our seasons.
So if you're overseeding, do you just throw seed down and that's good enough, or do you do stuff or what?
No, you want to loosen. You got to loosen the ground up with a rake, a slice seeder, a corerator. You got to break the ground up to get the seed to have good seed soil contact. Otherwise, the seed won't germinate.
Yeah, especially probably in the clay that we have. Most people have
clay, and then again, if you got a dead spot and you got a bunch of dead matted dead turf and you just throw it on top of that, it's you have no or lousy seed soil contact, so the seed can't absorb moisture. If the seed can't absorb moisture, it can't germinate.
But I throw a lot of seed down. Doesn't that help?
Water's more important than seed. You can put 76 pounds of seed down, and if it does not get water on it, it's still not going to germinate.
Or ground contact.
I'll be damned. You know, that doesn't work as well as I thought it was going to. My wife gets so mad at me. Anytime I try to do anything on my own, and it inevitably ends with the comment, "I told you you should have called someone."
That's a wife thing.
No, that is a wife thing.
That's a wife
thing. So what else are we missing? You mentioned turf.
Another question I always get, which is kind of funny, is, you know, when's the last time I have to mow? I don't freaking know. Well,
and that, how short should I mow?
That Mother Nature dictates that. It's not the calendar doesn't dictate that.
November 19th.
November 19th. That's it. You're done. Mother Nature dictates that. I mean, you don't want your like we talked earlier in the show, you don't want the lawn to be completely covered with leaves all winter long.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be 5 inches long and laying over on itself and then get matted down or packed down with snow or whatever. So, you know, I don't abide by the rule that, well, you mow 3 inches all summer and then you drop down to 2 for winter. Again, you can get on the internet and you can find somebody that's going to tell you that that's how it should be done.
Yep.
And I'm not going to tell that person they're wrong. I just abide by the rule that if it needs mowed, I mow it. And if it's the last of October and that's the last time I mow, that's fine. I mean, looking at my lawn and the amount of leaves that are on it and after the snow melted and all the wind that we've had, I mean, I'm totally going to mow at least once more, you know, maybe twice. Depends on temperatures.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I've been accused of being an idiot too about, you know, what the hell are you doing? What are you mowing? I mean, I've mowed the 1st of December before, but I mean, if it needs mowed, it needs mowed.
Yeah.
And, but again, Mother Nature temperatures dictate that. I mean, calendar doesn't dictate that.
So should you cut it lower?
I don't
or leave it about where it was, or cut it higher?
I cut mine at the same height. Well, let me take that back. I cut mine at about 3 inches right now. And when we get, as soon as it gets dry, so that could be the 1st of June, that could be the middle of June, I go up to 4 inches through June, July, and August.
and then September, and this, and I try to keep it about two and a half to three, but usually 3 inches. But the longer you keep it and keep it consistently mowed, but keep it long in the summertime, your lawn will stay green a lot longer than your neighbors. And all you have to do is mow infrequently, and when you mow infrequently, mow high. And when it gets hot and dry, just don't mow.
Yeah.
And your lawn will tolerate a hot, dry summer really well. If you're mowing at 2 inches and you mow again by the calendar, oh, it's Thursday, I got to mow so it looks nice for the weekend, and it hasn't rained in 3 weeks, don't freaking mow it. Just take a break. Chill.
You know? Can you raise it real high and knock it down the buckhorn?
Well,
you're driving over...
Yeah, just mowing to knock down the buckhorn is a bad idea, because you are smashing your bluegrass that's struggling anyhow. You're just smashing the living daylights.
But I know people that I have to knock the buckhorn down. I gotta do it. And
I don't worry about that.
I was pretty sure that was your answer.
Well, Steve, I'll tell you what, that was a quick hour, fella.
That was a quick hour. I mean, I think we could probably keep going. Bubba can wait, right?
That's something you'll have to talk to him about. Hey,
I haven't even seen Fee. Is Fee here?
Probably.
Oh, okay.
I just happened to think of something. Are you still doing your show on WCSM on Saturday mornings? Is that done for the season?
That's done for the season.
Okay.
Yep. That's from March till the last show was the middle of October.
Okay. So we won't plug that. We'll plug it in March when you come back for spring stuff.
That's for spring stuff.
Steve, I'll tell you what. You never fail to amaze me with your knowledge. And, oh, wait.
I got a question.
Rocker's got a question.
Steve.
Yes, sir.
I noticed in the, you were talking about patios before. In the last several years, people will put their fire pits in that too.
Mm-hmm.
Is that dangerously close to the house? I mean, if the wind would...
Well, I mean, we certainly, if we're doing like a permanent type of a fire feature, we have... You know, Mercer County is kind of the wild, wild west, but Dark County, Miami County, they have inspectors, and we have certain guidelines that we have to follow as far as if we're doing a fire feature, like a fire ring has to be so far from the house. If we're doing a fireplace, outdoor fireplace, the chimney has to have a certain height, and it has to be so far away from the house, has to be a certain height against the house and the peaks of the house. There's a lot actually that goes into it. If you've got a like the portable ones that you can get at the box stores and stuff like that, certainly you got to be careful. I mean, you certainly can put that too close, and if you go to bed and you guys are done for the evening and there's still embers glowing and stuff, you could certainly create some issues, no question.
But most generally, what you probably should do is have it out in the grass.
Well, I mean, you don't have to have it out in the grass, but you should probably, you'd have to keep it a comfortable distance away from the house. And then, you know, exposure makes a difference too. I mean, north, south, east, west. I mean, if you've got it on the west side of the house, most of your predominant winds in the summertime are going to come from west to east, so it's going to blow stuff towards the house. So different factors make a difference. And then if you're just roasting a couple of marshmallows with a little embers glowing, you're probably safe. But then if you're out there and you got 16 logs going and you got flames as high as the peak of the house, that's
gonna
be
an issue. That could go for the same for the grill too. I mean, is that,
I've seen people melt siding off of houses with their grill being too close. I've actually seen that a bunch of different times.
Yeah,
so,
I bet that's easy.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
That's all I got.
I had blistered my railing on my deck by having the back of my...
You know, the ornamental, the great big tall ornamental grasses, like the maiden grasses and stuff like that. We had a guy, and I won't mention names, and I won't mention what town he's from, but he thought it would be a really good idea because he hates cutting them down, and he didn't want to pay us to cut them down. He burned them off and absolutely destroyed the side of his house.
Oh, my.
All the siding was sagging. It had to call the fire department, so don't burn down your ornamental grasses. It's a bad idea. They burn really easily, but it's typically a little too close to the house.
That's understandable. So I'll tell you what, Neil, let's take one more break and then come back and do Rocker.
Yep. What do you got for us, Rocker?
On this day in pop culture history,
pop culture history,
old school style. My favorite topic.
All right.
So we'll be back right after this.
Boars Welding and Steel in Fort Recovery has 35 years of business experience with over 150 years of welding experience. From lawnmowers to semis, bring it to Boars, or Steve can send a mobile rig to you. If it can be welded, Boars Welding and Steel can do it. Need something made and fabricated? It's their specialty. Call Renee today at 419-375-4087. Boars Welding and Steel, 2 miles north of Fort Recovery on State Route 49, or call Steve for a quick quote at 419-375-4087.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from Fort Site Fuel in Fort Recovery. Right on the corner of Fort Site Street and State Route 49, Fort Site Fuel is your local stop for top-tier gasoline and ultra-low sulfur diesel. It's self-serve, open 24/7, and their pumps take all the major credit cards. Easy and convenient, day or night.
We thank Fort Site Fuel for their support of the Tribe 107.3.
Support for the Tribe 107.3 comes from CSG Consulting. Aisha, they help businesses and individuals build smart strategies using financial modeling and analysis. CSG assists with keeping an eye on performance, managing business dashboards, and analyzing budget differences. They also help adjust strategies and manage change because what worked before might not work tomorrow. Their focus is on understanding all the moving parts in your operation to keep everything balanced and on track. You can learn more at csgconsulting.us or call 419-852-4049 or 614-551-4631. Thank you, CSG Consulting, for supporting Fort Recovery Community Radio, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
The High School SAD Club at Fort Recovery High School is sponsoring a holiday food drive. They'll be collecting non-expired, non-perishable food items through Friday, November 21st. Then the SAD members will deliver all items collected to Rustic Hope and other local food pantries the week of November 24th. And to help encourage everybody to give to this cause, there will be a contest. One class from each building will receive a party. The homeroom class at the elementary school, fifth period class at the middle school, and the tribe time class at the high school that collects the most items will receive a pizza party in December. All non-perishable items will be accepted, but here's a short list of items that food pantries go through the fastest. Ramen packets, cake mixes, Knorr rice and pasta sides, Lipton instant soup packets, rice cakes, and canned meat. So let's gather as much non-perishable food as we can and get it to the local food pantries to help out our friends and neighbors in need this holiday season with the Fort Recovery High School SAD Group's Holiday Food Drive going on now through Friday, November 21st.
We're back. Insight. I love talking to Steve Stone.
Top notch, ain't it?
He's one of the easiest guests that I can have because he just runs with it, you know? So, speaking of running with it, Rocker, what you got
tonight? I haven't run since 1972. That's 2 years before I was born.
I had a comment there, but I'm not going to share it.
Well, you might as well get your shots in, too.
Nope. So what you got tonight, buddy?
November 11th, 1980, Too Close for Comfort premieres on ABC.
Ooh, Too Close for Comfort.
It lasted...
Wait.
What?
Too Close for Comfort. There's a lady that starred in that.
Oh, well, yes. It's got to be a mom. Well, not necessarily in this case.
I don't know anything about Too Close for Comfort, so I don't know if there's a mom or not.
There's a wife. I mean...
Okay, now, so who...
Because the daughters were adopted in this case.
Oh, I don't know. That's the one I was thinking of. Who starred in it?
It starred the lovely Ted Knight.
Yes. And he had both a blonde daughter and a brunette daughter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, it lasted 6 seasons. It was getting ready to be picked up for the 7th season when, Ted bought the farm.
Oops. No kidding. I didn't realize he was still acting when he died.
He was still going, trying to anyway.
Who's his wife?
In real life?
Yeah.
Mrs. Knight.
Mrs. Knight, yes.
Wasn't he married to somebody famous?
No.
Betty White?
No.
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 That was Alan Ludden.
Oh, yeah.
He was on Match Game.
Yep. No, he was
Password. The password is
the boss.
2013, Blockbuster closes after 28 years in business.
I wonder why they closed.
Well, streaming systems.
Yeah.
A lot of things kind of killed that business.
Not really, just one.
But yes, the streaming systems and internet. Let's go to November 12th, 1946. Disney's Song of the South raises a lot of eyebrows, even back then.
Really?
What year was that?
1946.
46, sorry, yep. Zippity-doo-dahs.
No, that was the good part of the movie. The bad part, of course, was the Uncle Remus. Some of the master talk, which I didn't think would, back then it wouldn't have been such a big deal, but today it would raise a lot of eyebrows. It would not pass the test.
So you said that it raised eyebrows back then, too?
Apparently. I just go by what they told me.
Yeah, so Uncle Remus.
Yeah, that was, well, you know, back then, that was the kind of thing that was, you know, laughed at. You know, but, I mean,
what a great song.
Oh, the Zippity Doo Dah was top notch.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in those kind of those kind of movies.
And I think a Jungle Book too.
I'm not sure I saw. I don't know any songs from
Bare Necessities. Bare Necessities.
Wanna bear it right out of here?
No, all right, go ahead.
2016, Stan Lee, the creator of the Marvel Universe, passes at 95.
Stan Lee.
You know who Stan Lee is?
Bruce Lee's dad.
Not quite.
Huh?
He created Spider-Man. Oh, pretty much the whole X-Men.
I thought that was Marvel.
Well, he was Marvel. He was the one that created it.
Really?
Yes.
So is he Oriental?
Not quite.
No.
White as snow.
I didn't know that.
For those people young enough to know, he was on the Big Bang Theory quite often.
That was Stephen Cushing.
Who?
Stephen, no.
Who?
No, you said it so wrong, I can't even think of the guy's
Stephen Hawking,
name.
You mean?
Yeah, that's what he
said. Well, he was on there, too.
Yeah. And so was Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's the other guy, the actor in Space Wars or whatever?
I'd never
Star
heard of
Trek.
Him before. Yeah,
George Takei.
No. The guy that was very well known, but he and Sheldon were always at each other.
Will Wheaton.
Yep.
Thank you for playing along.
Yeah, you Will Wheaton.
Citizen of the Day time.
Oh boy.
Oh, this is a Citizen of the Day and / shout out to the ladies of Park National who helped me out about a week ago.
Oh.
Had some baking problems.
Uh-oh.
So yeah.
You overdrew?
No. My check didn't quite come in on time.
Oh.
So that was a little bit of, it got redirected somehow.
Probably some scam thing. What did you click on to get somebody to steal your identity?
No, it was we was switching over my railroad stuff, and that's how that happened. Celebrity birthday time for Tuesday.
Celebrity birthday.
I'm guessing this name's not going to ring a bell to you. Mark Summers of Double Dare, back in the 80s.
Who?
Mark Summers of Double Dare.
Oh, yes, I remember him.
Double Dare.
Have no
74.
Idea.
I did not realize he's that old.
Well, he wasn't back then.
Thank you, Miss Cleo.
You're right. He wasn't.
He was?
Yep. I'm talking about now, there's Scooter. It's like Bill is here. Stanley Tucci is 65.
Stanley who?
Stoochley.
Tucci.
I've heard the name.
You've never heard.
Yes, I have.
He made the. Who in the hell is Stanley Tucci?
He's
Tucci.
Been in a lot of movies. He's actually a pretty good character actor.
Spell his last name.
I would say Tucci, but I don't know that.
Very good, Neil. Thanks for playing along.
Oh, Tucci. That's his last name.
Not Ducky.
Tucci. Stanley Tucci.
Demi Moore turned 63 today, or yesterday.
Who?
God, it's like, is this like an echo? Demi Moore.
Demi Moore.
You ought to know her. Bruce's ex.
Yep. Ghost.
Yep.
All the President's Men.
She has something new coming out this...
She's in Landman.
Yep, that's what it is.
She was in Charlie's Angels, or at least one of them.
No.
The movie. Movies.
No.
Yes.
That was Candace...
Bergen.
No.
What? No.
You're thinking of the Oriental Girl.
She was in there, too.
Lucy Lee.
Lou?
No, Lucy.
Clifton Flockhart turns 61.
Watch your language.
Ally McBeal.
Married to?
Harrison Ford. Han Solo.
Oh. Wow.
Anorexic.
Very good, yes. Very. She needs a meal. Much like
better now,
Celine Dion.
That's good.
And Leonardo DiCaprio turns a crisp 51.
Congratulations, Leo. Today, so what do you think of the movie Titanic?
About 55 minutes too long.
But it's good, though, right? I mean, you liked it?
If you like love stories about a movie that you know how it's going to end.
See, I told you he was grumpy.
November 12th.
You did it to him.
Wallace Shawn turns 82.
Ah, pitcher for the Atlanta Braves.
Who?
No. What?
Warren Spahn.
Yeah.
The Princess Bride. He was the little guy in Princess Bride.
He was a Milwaukee Braves, but still.
No.
He was a fidget?
Okay, this ain't going well.
Dim's a baby is Dim's fidgets.
Fidgets.
Like that, watching a battery run a hee haul. Neil Young turns 80.
Yep.
Song blue.
That's Neil Diamond, not Neil Young.
Oh.
That you should be ashamed of yourself for that.
Sorry.
That poor man's on the cusp of dying, and you're yep. pulling this crap on him.
Crosby, Stills, Nation, Diamond.
It is like Neil and Bill's here. The Ella Fitzgerald.
Hey, that was 50 that, years that, ago yeah. another day.
75 years ago.
50.
Huh?
And Ella sang too.
Yeah. Yes, she did.
Yep.
And so is this show. Nadia Comaneci turned 64.
One of
lovely gal.
She was the first gymnast to ever score a perfect 10.
Very flexible. If you're Bart Connors.
You know what? I get her and Olga Corbett mixed up.
I don't. Nadia's better looking.
You know what, Rocker? Life's about more than just physical appearance.
Well,
lucky for us.
the problem, though, is Olga, if she would have lost, would have been in a fire pit. If you ever think about that.
What?
I don't.
She's from a communist country. If she would have lost, she'd have been wolf bait.
Well, where's Nadia Comaneci from?
Same place. Oh, and she actually won.
Okay.
Well, now, from one good Olympian to one disgraced Olympian.
Uh-oh.
Tonya Harding turns 55 today.
I thought you were going to say Bruce Jenner.
There's a lot of them I was thinking of.
I'm guessing we want to keep this going.
Yep.
Ryan Gosling turns 45. No book.
Is that?
No book.
Barbie.
Kind of talks like this.
Gilbert Gottfried.
No, he's dead.
That's not the same guy.
Huh?
That's not the same guy. Ryan Gosling, and Gilbert Gottfried are not the same person.
They aren't
the
same guy?
No. Ryan's still with us.
But well, come to think of it, I've never seen them at the same time. They might be the same person.
Anne Hathaway is 43.
Top notch.
Yes. Lovely gal.
One of my three favorite actors.
Maybe not one of the better Catwomen, but, you know, hey.
Yeah, but so
the best Catwoman.
The best Catwoman.
Lena Horne.
No.
Wasn't she the one on TV?
Well.
That was Eartha Kitt.
I'm always going to pick.
She was hot.
The.
Halle Berry?
Yeah.
Was she a Catwoman?
Yep.
Yes, ooh, she was.
Ooh. But, yeah. I mean, if you're talking like the Batman Catwoman.
Julie Newmar.
Julie Newmar is hard to beat.
Yes.
Yeah. She beats the hell out of Eartha Kitt. I will promise you
90,
that.
Nope. She's 92, going to be 92 here pretty soon.
Who is Eartha Kitt?
No. Julie Newmar.
Is that right?
Eartha's not doing any more birthdays.
Is that right?
I have me either.
I reach that age too.
We still got Barbara Eden. We still got
Barbara Eden was never Catwoman.
No, but she's still alive.
So are 3 billion other people.
No, but, you know, celebrity-wise, at least we still got them.
Yeah.
Who was your first celebrity crush?
Most likely it would probably have been Drew Barrymore.
Oh, I was thinking you're going to say James Arness.
E.T. She was...
James Arness?
She was 11 years old in E.T., for God's sake.
I was... 8?
Okay.
I was getting some action back then.
So are they having sports talk tonight?
Only if we get the hell out of the way.
Oh.
8:20.
So, hey, stay tuned for Sports Talk. I think Bubba and Fee's coming.
Yeah, and they're going to have a basketball coach.
The basketball coach.
Coach Deitch.
Back very good. While.
You can hear him hollering in the back.
About time you guys show up.
Thank you for staying tuned to Insight with Mr. Jack Stogler, right here on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. This show was being brought to you in part by those community-minded sponsors you heard during the show. Thank you.